Hey, and hello to you. This is the Audio Drama Production Podcast once again. My name's Robert. I'm here with Matthew.
You are indeed. Hello.
And we're here to discuss all things audio drama and the production thereof. And interesting episode this week, something a little bit political.
Yeah, it is, in a sense. This is because I recently listened to an audio drama adaptation of a book, a novel called The Ragged Trousered Philanthropist. And it's one of my favourite books. And this adaptation, it's actually only on YouTube. I'm not sure if it's on YouTube legitimately or not, because it was a production, I believe, for the BBC a few years ago. And you know what the BBC are like, because stuff tends to vanish once it's been broadcast for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So like I say, this adaptation of The Ragged Trouser Philanthropist is on YouTube. It was made by Johnny Vegas and Dirk Maggs, and it was a really wonderful adaptation of this great book, a book that was written in the late 1800s in England about a group of painters and basically the class struggle of the time. It was essentially a socialist manifesto built into a novel. And the adaptation of it, the audio drama adaptation, really did it a lot of justice. A lot of really well-known actors there, Timothy Spall, Paul Whitehouse, Andrew Lincoln of Walking Dead fame before he was famous. I didn't know he was in it until afterwards. Mm. I was very impressed with the lead actor and I found out that it was him.
And that he's British.
And that he's British, yeah, that's what threw me. And it got me thinking, you know, this is a very political piece, and all the criticisms of it, because sometimes you're drawn to the comments section, and it was interesting that there was nothing about, you know, audio drama, there was nothing about the story or that, but there was a lot of people there saying, oh, socialist claptrap, and then, you know, a socialist person would respond, and it was a political argument. So it was interesting that there was a story there, and no one really discussed the story, but everyone wanted to debate politics, and insofar as you know how intelligent a debate you can get in the YouTube's YouTube comments section.
Oh, wonderful!
But you know, we all have our own beliefs, and I dare say, you know, I'm definitely a socialist myself. But we'll have people listening to this show who are conservatives, who are maybe atheists or Christians, people who consider themselves right wing, left wing, whatever.
People who use Mac rather than PC.
Yeah, those two, and yeah. It just made me think, when we write stories, because there's a lot of people out there that would say, well, you shouldn't really bring your politics into your fiction, or you shouldn't really bring religion, or, you know, being anti-religion into your fiction. But I suppose we don't exist in a vacuum, do we? You're a product of your own environment, and you grow up and you establish your beliefs. You get a bit set in your ways, and that's inevitably going to filter through into your stories at some point, isn't it? Even if you're not intentionally setting out to create something that's political.
Yeah, I was about to go on there about how there's lots of really good pieces of art, like movies that are political, like anti-war, anti-Vietnam War, for instance. There's a ton of movies that came out there. But on the subject of your political views and so on bleeding into your work, maybe unconsciously, Terry Pratchett, the late great British fantasy author, I noticed after reading a lot of his books, and I think I've read them all, that certain viewpoints kept coming forward and a lot of his characters had similar stances. And I wondered if he was aware he was doing it. I won't give too many examples, but he certainly favoured the cat. Cats were always in his books here and there, you know, more than dogs. And I wonder how much it happens in art that we're not aware of. Like you could say a lot of climate change references make it into art nowadays, and the fact that we've ruined the world, like Walking Dead maybe. You could say that's a metaphor for climate change or political change. But yeah, no, I think political art has its place, definitely, as long as it's got a very specific message and it starts a dialogue, but maybe not just lecturing people blindly.
And a lot of art historically, it has been a product of the times that it came from, particularly turbulent times. There's an old Chinese curse. You would say to somebody, may you live in interesting times, if you wanted to curse them. Probably
yeah.
The Scottish version of that would be like, I hope your next shit's a hedgehog.
Yeah.
But that's an old Chinese curse, and I think it just relates to, if you live in interesting times, those aren't going to be easy times.
That's right.
And that is maybe where you see things being stirred up in people. And, well, I mean, Tolkien himself, did he not base a lot of the big wars in Lord of the Rings around the First World War?
I heard that recently and I wasn't entirely aware of it, but it would make sense.
And then even like where George Romero, a lot of his stuff, I've heard arguments, I don't know if it's true or not, that he was, you know, it was a very anti-capitalist sort of, some of the later stuff certainly.
Oh yeah, like the Dawn of the Dead when they're all trying to get into the mall.
Yeah.
And they're all just wandering around like zombies. Or the Night of the Living Dead was very, very political in terms of, like, the lead character was a black guy and everybody didn't treat him as well as they should have done in a crisis when, like, living hell is outside trying to get in and, like, well, that's all good and well, but you're black. And at the end, the police, you know, the army or whatever, when they get there, they can see him walking around and they just shot him dead because, like, well, he might have been a zombie. So why take the risk?
Yeah, that ending scarred me when I first saw it.
Really?
I was mortified.
Were you like, what the? Why?
After all that had just happened as well.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, so I love the idea of there being a message in a film, especially political message. And well, that's the thing about politics. There's no right and wrong. No system that's been conceived of is perfect. So get the dialogue going. And if there's just a decent story inherent and you can enjoy it on that basis alone, then great. I mean, one film, Avatar. Have you seen Avatar?
Yeah.
It's terrible. I mean, it's great in a lot of ways, but actually a really bland story. And it's like, oh, but this is like the Native American Indians and capitalism this, capitalism that. And actually it was just dull.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the whole plot there was totally telegraphed from the very start.
Unobtainium. I'll just stop you there because actually I can go home now. Thank you.
So if you set out though to tell a story, say I wanted to tell a story that conveyed this big political message, am I not getting off on the wrong foot? Because when you set out to tell a story, should you not be starting with the characters? Should you be starting with the plot? Or should you be thinking about, well, I want to convey this big message. Is there a right or wrong answer there?
This is something we've discussed before. Like, how do you start off with a story? Is it character driven? Is it story? Does it have a theme like post-apocalyptia, like, wow, right, we want to destroy Scotland and then write a story based on that? Or, you know, could it be an interesting person that acts in a certain way that doesn't care about capitalism or consumerism? Now let's give them an adventure to go on that shows that. No, there's no right answer or wrong answer. Maybe a few wrong answers. It depends how strong you want your message to be, I suppose. Do you want to set out for it to be anti-capitalist or anti-communist or whatever? Or do you just simply want some sort of time-travelling piece of art and then you build something into it?
I mean, look at maybe Orwell's stuff. Like, there was definitely a reoccurring theme throughout George Orwell's work, wasn't there? From 1984 to Animal Farm. And he gets criticised from both the left and the right because, you know, some people would say he was very sort of pro-Soviet Union, and others would say, well, he was attacking the Soviet Union. Because, I mean, it's no real secret that 1984 was kind of based on the sort of early Soviet era, you know, with the death of Lenin, the way Stalin sort of emerged, and it was kind of what influenced George Orwell. So he drew his critics on both sides, but certainly a political author, wasn't he?
And a prophet from, you know, some points of view as well. Like, look, this is where we're headed. We're headed into an era of fear and constant monitoring and so on. And same with Aldous Huxley with Brave New World. You know, they both wrote about dystopia, and a lot of that stuff has come to be true. So yeah, I think they had a very definite message, a viewpoint that they wanted to put across in a story. So, I mean, I don't think he came up with an idea for animals that could all talk and all took over a farm and then made it political. He obviously had the political message to begin with and took it from there.
What about characters themselves? This is something that I've been pretty conscious of because we're making the show a Scottish podcast at the moment. It's kind of a half comedy, half horror audio drama about two guys making a paranormal investigation podcast. And a lot of the characters, I mean, we play the two main characters, but I'm trying to make it, I'm trying not to make caricatures as characters. And I'm trying to bring in both likeable and less likeable elements into their traits. And that means, you know, not just the two main characters, but the other characters we've been bringing in. I've sort of written casual racism, there'll be a bit of bigotry, things like that. And this is never going to become the main focus of the plot. So there's a lot of maybe famous films, famous books, where you have someone who's maybe a very racist person, and in the end, he or she gets their comeuppance, or maybe they go through an experience that changes their mind and they come out the other end reformed. How acceptable is it just to bring these traits in and let your characters have them without really making an attempt to deal with them?
Yeah, it's a difficult line, isn't it? Like, you need to have these flaws. There are good flaws and bad flaws, flaws that endear you to characters and flaws that certainly put them off. You know, like if you've got a guy who's addicted to partying and laziness and he drinks too much and he takes recreational drugs, then you might be like, well, yeah, I can get on board with this guy. But the minute he starts drowning puppies, it's like, okay, no, that's too far. You're not the hero anymore. It used to be that these bad traits were entertaining in their own right, and then we realised we're not really allowed to laugh at that anymore. You know, like in comedy situations, somebody being a racist would have been top-grade humour back in the day, decades ago. And now we still have racism in comedy, but it's so that we can laugh at the racists. We hold up a mirror. Like shows like Family Guy, they often have really awful characters in them, but we're kind of laughing uncomfortably, we're laughing at them, and usually they don't amount to any good, these characters. They don't get away with it. So yeah, you've got to walk the line between making your character endearing or making your character a villain. You've got to care about them one way or another, and I think that's the purpose of it.
And it's when you sort of think about the flaws of your character, because we've all heard the one about, you know, the heavy drinking private eye or detective. He gets the job done, but at the same time he drinks a lot. He's maybe had an affair with his wife or something like that. He's done a few not very nice things, but he's the person that you consider the good guy with flaws because he still gets the job done.
Yeah.
On the other hand, what if you have like the faithfully married teetotal private eye who always gets the job done, but he's a little bit racist or he's homophobic? Can he still then be the good guy with flaws, or is he now the bad guy?
Yeah, no, I don't like the idea of the faithfully married teetotal private eye because he's like disciplined in a way that I can't be, you know. I don't mean I'm unfaithful. I mean, like, you know, that very sort of highly strung, very disciplined. And I'm imagining a guy that irons his shirts with starch and puts folds in his trousers and he's basically evil. You know, like that kind of classic Nazi officer who's very, very smartly turned out, but a right bastard. That's going to put you off the character straight away. Racist.
Does it all come down to then what your listener, or if you're writing a book, what your reader relates to? So like,
yeah, subjective.
We can all kind of relate to, or most of us probably can relate to the heavy drinking character, because we've all had those wee spells or those long weekends where you wake up on Monday morning with the existential dread and you consider your very existence. So when we see a character going through something like that, we could relate to it. Whereas if you see a character who's getting a lot of stick for punching his wife, beating his wife up, it's not like you're going to say, oh yeah, I wish people would back off me when I did that, because, you know, I would hope that that anyone listening isn't in that position.
Yeah.
So, maybe, yeah, it's maybe just what you relate to.
Maybe certain characters, it differs through the years. Like maybe 40 years ago, a hero would be today's anti-hero, because that crap just isn't acceptable anymore, whatever it is they do, you know. Well, I mean, racism and bigotry is the obvious one. Like, no, there's a real dialogue in this century where we're really sort of rooting that stuff out, even though some people are very much kind of in the other camp. So it's entirely subjective, yeah. Should we be writing our characters with flaws? Absolutely. But it has to be flaws. If you want your character to be endearing, it's got to be flaws that we can understand. And there has to be a point to it. You can't just have him casually racist for a bit of for no reason. Like, you know, imagine Indiana Jones. He's got his flaws, and then suddenly he's racist to the Asian kid Short Round, just out of nowhere for no reason, and slaps him across the head, and nothing ever comes of it. He doesn't learn a lesson as a result. Then it would be like, oh, no, you can't have that. There's no purpose to that. So yeah, you've got to have a purpose, whether it's to endear them or make them a villain, or to go through a personal challenge and come out better at the end.
But does that apply because he's a main character? Like, surely if you've just got characters who are part of the backstory,
yeah,
and these traits unfortunately exist in society, then you might have to come across people who have all sorts of beliefs, and you're not necessarily going to have time in your story to deal with them all. Or is it the Chekhov's gun thing, where if you're not going to fire it, leave it out, but then...
Yeah.
Does that limit the characters that you're then writing into the story?
All right, so the purpose could then be to explain why somebody's like they are now because of their bad childhood, and it's a flashback to his dad hitting his mum, you know, something like that. Or it's a way of painting the way the world is. There's definitely room for purpose. But yeah, you can't just have it there for no reason and it's unexplained and unexpected.
I think that's a good point, the way the world is, because your story's set somewhere.
Yeah.
It's set in a, what, presumably a society. Most stories are set in some form of society or community. That community, that society, people have certain ways, certain beliefs,
yeah.
Conflicting beliefs. Maybe some of the beliefs are a bit sort of backward and older, and then you've maybe got a new generation with some new ideas. But in societies, there's always that struggle. There's always ideas on their way out. There's always new ones ready to come in, and there's always that, you know, that flux between the generations.
Yeah, I mean, look at George Martin in Game of Thrones. He got criticised heavily for having certain scenes. We don't need to go into them here, but he argued that, well, look, sorry, in a lawless society like in Westeros, you're going to have these type of acts happening. You're going to have these people who don't have the same moral compass, and to you know, erase them from the script and have them not there would be kinda to deliberately skew reality. So that's why he put them in, not because he's a big fan of it or an advocate, or he's trying to necessarily be deliberately controversial, but it occurs to him that's how it would be, so he's writing it the way it is. That's his vision.
As a writer then, how do you, or should you even have to worry about distancing yourself from some of the more unsavoury beliefs or remarks or things that your characters have done? Characters who aren't necessarily out-and-out bad guys, because I think less and less in more mature fiction, we don't see completely bad guys, you know, black versus white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more people are writing characters, unless it's all these like superhero films that are out there now. You've got, and you're, like I say, you're more mature fiction, you've got characters who maybe have a little bit of bad, a little bit of good. They're not quite roundly defined like that. So should you worry about some of the things your characters say and do? I mean, should you have to apologise for them almost?
Yeah, no, I would say stay true to your vision as much as you can. If you've got to put a trigger warning at the beginning, then do that. Ways that you can show that these views don't necessarily reflect your view is to have the way the world reacts to it. If you've got the guy that beats up his family and steals from people, and the film ends with "We Are the Champions" playing, then yeah, okay, somehow you've made it acceptable. But if you can have people showing their disgust or their upset and eliciting empathy from the audience, because you're doing it through the wife, the eyes of the wife or the family, and showing that it's evil, then you're not the character. You are the writer of the universe. You are the god of that universe, and you're showing it to be a bad thing. And most sensible people won't think that you're advocating it.
So it's about providing a balance, not necessarily a 50-50 balance, but if you've got a story where somebody is doing something that isn't overly desirable, there's at least someone that's going to be there at some point in the story to counter it, to challenge them on it.
Yeah.
Whether you're writing about a certain thing that's taking place and a group of people are going completely unchallenged, at least at some point in the story that's going to be brought up, and they're not just going to be allowed to continue unhindered for the duration of the tale.
What I like about Walking Dead is it doesn't always end with some bad guy getting his comeuppance and everyone high-fiving each other. Sometimes there are no winners and there's just people dead on both sides and they just go about their business, you know? And that reflects the world. There is no law, therefore there is no good and bad, and not everything turns out the way you want. Sometimes bad things happen. What it has to be, though, is fulfilling in some way. Whether it's fulfilling in an awful way, but at least it's wrapped it up, then at least you've not just sort of left it hanging like something bad happens and then nothing happens as a result. There's got to be consequence and fulfillment. Not necessarily a positive thing. Not necessarily the hero overcoming adversity and the villain getting his body spacked, you know? So, yeah, fulfillment, I guess. That's my word for today.
And I suppose the alternative option is simply not to bring these elements into the story and thin out your characters because their views aren't in line with your own or with the generally accepted views in society. So they're no longer really characters at that point, are they? Once you've said, well, we can't have him believing this, we can't have her believing that, is that just like four or five different versions of of yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, like they say, you know, the difference between reality and fiction is that fiction has to make sense. You know, sometimes bad people get away with things in real life and that's it. You're just like, well, that's a shame. What can we do about it in future? You've got to show the diversity of the world, definitely. And you can't just have someone doing something bad just for your superhero to punch them in the face. As long as it
Unless
makes sense.
It's comedy, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, like you can't, you have to, if you want to be considered an able writer, you need to be able to push beyond what your own beliefs are. And that, first of all, might be to take a step back and look at what your beliefs are and how they differ from other people's. You know, there's a lot of political uproar going on across the world at the moment, especially in the United States. Again, we won't delve into it too much, but maybe, just maybe, we would have to say, well, that person, that politician, and we all know the one we're thinking about, maybe he's right on some accounts. Maybe he would be a good president. I've given it away because there's only one of them that's male. But, you know, I personally would never vote for D. Trump. But what if I'm wrong? What the heck do I know? Maybe he's got a point. Maybe he's the president that America needs, because it's a very different society to ours. Even Scotland and England are very different. We're more of a socialist country up here than we are, say, down in the southeast of England. But what if the Tory government is the best government at the moment? Because that's what we've got. I read a really good book. It was actually a Star Trek book, and it was about the Federation and the Romulans were both fighting over a planet politically and trying to influence this planet to accept one of them, either the Federation or the Romulans, to take them into their collective to act as administrators. And funnily enough, eventually the planet sided with the Romulans because it just suited them more. They wanted the Romulans. But from the 90% of the book was me thinking, well, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, they're going to go with us, they're going to go with us, they're going to go with us. Oh, but we weren't in line with their thinking. And it made me take a step back and think, well, not everything I think is good is what's good for everyone.
Also, on this subject, was it It was you that brought up Beavis and Butthead yesterday, was it not? I mean,
there's a sore beef for the palate.
Yeah, we go for Donald Trump to Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
But what was it you were saying about them again?
Oh, yeah. Like, initially you think, oh, this is just about two young tearaways who are being really bad and nothing seems to happen to them as a result. They don't learn anything and this is just an excuse for hijinks. And actually, as bad as they are, as stupid as they are, really the programme is a joke on them. We're laughing not just with them, but we're actually laughing at them for being so stupid, getting into stupid situations and suffering as a result. So we're not really advocating their behaviour because we can easily see that when they do what they do, that nothing good comes of it. So, yeah, that was my point at the time. It's just, you can have this sort of behaviour as long as they're not winning as a result. And while we're on the subject, it was something I kind of touched on before about the good flaws and bad flaws. I touched on it very briefly. I like the things that are acceptable and flaws and stuff that isn't, like racism and bigotry, not acceptable. Beating people up, probably not acceptable unless you're Batman, but you're beating up the wrong people. You know, it's a whole trope thing now online. Like, here are the good flaws, here are the bad flaws, and here are the things that might just take you over the moral horizon. We can put it in the show notes. It's on tvtropes.org. I mean, there's a lot to read there, but it's interesting when you start to think, oh, yeah, I guess when I do see someone with that flaw, it doesn't put me off them. It kind of endears them to me. I had a little look at it the other day, but then I realised I was going down a rabbit hole. So check it out in the show notes. Good flaws versus bad flaws and the moral horizon.
So how many good flaws and bad flaws did you have? Did the good outweigh the bad?
They did, thankfully. Or I denied that I had most of the bad flaws. Some of the bad flaws were pretty bad. I mean, you know, like the worst crimes on earth sort of things. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Like proper evil. So, yeah, I'm not proper evil, thankfully. Yeah, no, it was a good thing to look at for, if you're ever writing a character and think, I've got this dull Superman-type guy that's got nothing bad in his character whatsoever and he's actually boring, have a look at this and go down the good flaws and you may think, oh, yeah, okay, cool. That's a good way of making something interesting. And funnily enough, I just mentioned Superman there. Superman's often considered a boring superhero. Batman's much more flawed. He doesn't have the super strength. He's actually a pretty bad people person. Doesn't get on very well with his so-called friends. And he's a vigilante who beats people up and decides to take the law into his own hands a lot. So he's much more interesting a character and someone I love to read about more than Superman. So there you go. Who's your favourite superhero?
Wolf out the Gladiators.
All right.
Made a film about him. They didn't.
The Wolverine.
an enjoyable discussion. I'm really curious to hear what people think. You know, is there a right or wrong with this sort of stuff? Is it all subjective?
Funny. Other filmmakers apart from Steven Spielberg is where I'm going with this. They say that Steven Spielberg's got nothing to say. And I'm like, what? He's one of the best directors of all time. Look at all the films he's made. Jaws, Schindler's List, Jurassic Park, and so on. I mean, a lot of films. And I'm thinking, oh, I see what they mean. Like, okay, so war in general is bad and the Holocaust is bad. Fair enough. There's no political point of view there at all. Jaws, a monster is bad. And we need to kill the monster. Okay, fine. And he doesn't have any political viewpoints in his films. So it's interesting that other directors are like, okay, so he can do like the money shot or whatever for his films and he makes them a lovely experience. But he's not like Stanley Kubrick or Oliver Stone who are mental, you know, and they really like to put their films forward that have a real message, and the message is key more than the big scenic shot that Steven Spielberg's famous for.
There will be some blogs out there with posts on how Jaws is a metaphor for some sort of political movement. They will exist.
Naturally. There'll probably be some homoerotic Jaws fan fiction out there as well, and all power to them.
Yeah, so get in touch. I'd really love to hear from people about this. What's your views? Have you written any particularly nasty characters that you feel bad about it? Do you write some bad flaws into your so-called good characters? And if so, do you feel guilty about that? Do you find yourself apologising for them? These are all things that you could get in touch with us and let us know. podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. That there is the email address. And with that, are we ready to move on to other matters?
Last thing I'll say is, do you remember in Aftermath, the audio drama set in Scotland?
Never heard it.
It was in series two, or season two, when I threw in a comment there about one of the characters saying that if you want to understand a people, you study their art, which is something I stole from elsewhere. But I think that's true, don't you? That if you want to really know about a people, study their art, which probably was created in interesting times, and you can learn a lot. So on that basis alone, I'd say put your political views into your art. Do it now. Do it today.
If any aliens are invading Earth and they check out our TV channels, the sort of stuff that we look at online, then they won't. They maybe just leave us, to be honest.
Funnily enough, we've yet to encounter aliens. So correlation, causation, who knows?
So on to other matters, just a very brief mention for a couple of other things. I recently put together a guide on the website on how to get your audio drama into iTunes and other similar directories, because this is still something that is confusing when you're totally new to audio drama. And we were the same back in the day, Robert. The first thing you do when you make something, when you put some audio together, you probably fire it on like say SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. You maybe just put it on YouTube as a slideshow or just a still image. These places are fine. You could share them, you could listen on there, but the bulk of your listeners that you want to go out there and find and really grow an audience, those people are going to want to consume your stuff in podcast directories, whether that's the podcast app, whether it's iTunes on their computer, places like Stitcher, Overcast, everywhere like that as well. So
Yeah, it's funny. I wonder how many people have loaded iTunes with their MP3 ready and then just looked for the upload button and thought, oh, crap, okay, this is more difficult than I thought, and then went to SoundCloud, hit the upload button.
SoundCloud.
I did say that, didn't I? SoundCloud from Denmark. And gone to SoundCloud or MixCloud. And then it uploaded it, and it's like, well, there it is. It's fine. I can just tell people it's there on Facebook. End of. But you're absolutely right. You need to put it in as many places as possible. Many proper podcast fans listen to podcasting apps like iTunes or, as you say, Stitcher. I've been using Castbox, not Castrate, which featured in the Scottish podcast recently. Do it. And it's really easy. And I've had a look at the guide. It's really good, straightforward. Even I could follow it.
Yeah, just a step-by-step guide. Just one more thing on this, just based on what you're saying, because, again, that is information that might be confusing initially, is that I'm going to have to go to iTunes and upload my audio drama. And
no,
you don't do that. You don't upload your audio drama all these different places. You sign up and create an account with a media host, such as Libsyn or Blueberry or Spreaker, and you upload your files there, and that's where all your show's details are, that's where your cover art is, and your media host gives you an RSS feed, and that's a unique URL, and you just give that URL to iTunes, to Stitcher, and you begin to be listed there. So in the past, I've spoke about this. Your media host is like the factory that's producing the goods, and all these directories are just the shop fronts that distribute them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're only uploading to one place. But don't make that place SoundCloud. Don't make it YouTube. Certainly, put your shows in these places as extra bonus places to be found, but don't make it the primary source of your audio drama, because it's going to make things difficult for you further down the line when you start to build a serious following. So links to that wee guide will be in the show notes at audiodramaproduction.com. Last thing on the show, been listening to anything recently, Robert? Did you not say you'd been listening to The Truth?
Yes, I listened to, what's the guy? I think it's called The Man in the Barn. I listened to that one recently. It was really good. I can't really talk much about it because I'll give it away. But yeah, I wrote a review of The Truth for work, basically. And ended up listening to about 4 or 5 just because I haven't listened to The Truth for a while. It is just so excellent. It's really good. I love The Truth so much. First listened to it a couple of years ago. Absolutely loved it. A guy on the phone talking to a girl on the phone about coconut cake. And it's really weird. I mean, that's what I put in a review. It's 1 minute it's what if the moon landing went wrong and they died on the moon but had a few hours to talk first and the social implications. And then suddenly it's The Man in the Barn. Then it's this couple talking over a cake. It's a lecturer talking to students and he pulls out a gun. The Truth is fantastic. It's the best in dialogue that I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's one of the very first audio dramas that I started listening to in the day. And it's something that I've always enjoyed. I'll kind of binge it and then I'll forget about it for a couple of years and then I'll go back and I'll binge more of them.
Well, you can do that because it's a series of one-offs. And
yeah, exactly.
You're not like, oh, who's this again? Who's that again? It doesn't matter. You're hearing it for the first time. And, you know, I can actually remember the first time I listened to The Truth. I was walking home from the garage after dropping my broken car off there and it getting fixed and having to walk home and being annoyed about it because it was slightly raining. And I put my headphones in and I searched the dial for something to listen to. And there's The Truth. Fantastic. And I remember telling you about it and you're like, aye, I can, good. All right, okay, you already know about it.
I'm the hipster. I've already heard that.
You were like, yeah, man, you should have heard the early episodes. They were the shows.
There's actually, if you're a subscriber to Radio Drama Revival, like if you like this podcast, I'm sure you like Radio Drama Revival as well. David Reinstrom's got an interview with Jonathan Mitchell. I think they just published it last week. I've still not heard it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. In fact, that might well be my listening in the car home tonight. So again, links to that.
Excellent.
In the show notes. I've been listening to You Are Here, and that's a show brought to us by the creators of Atheist Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And it's a really unique format that they've got because they've gone for the Choose Your Own Adventure setup, and people who pledge to them on Patreon after a certain amount of episodes, I think it is, they are presented with, say, 3 choices and they get to vote on the way they want the story to go. Right. So that's a really, really unique take on audio drama. What really impressed me about You Are Here was the way it started. Because
I listened to it last night for the first time, funnily enough.
Did you? Yeah. So, I mean, how about that for setting the scene? There's so much detail in there without being expositional, without just, like, you know, tipping a bucket of water over your head. Like, have all these details. But they very quickly set a massive story, a massive scene.
Yeah.
And I never felt overwhelmed by details. And by the time, because it was an episode 0, essentially like a prologue, and you get to the end of that and you're like, right, I'm 100% clear on everything that's happening.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to get into the story now. And on top of that, you know, the acting and the production are excellent as well. So it ticked a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah, right, that's really good. And it's not like, you know, when you catch yourself thinking about why something was written this way or the production, because you're not really 100% invested. Instead, you're looking at the stitching. And it wasn't like that at all. It was like, if it was at all, it was only because that's what we do almost, not for a living, but we're involved in the production of audio dramas, such as the podcast. But it was immersive, you know, without you sort of looking at it going, oh, yeah, right, okay. So he's only said that because of that, and I'm sure that'll come up later on. And this is the love interest, and up there's the villain. You know, you're not thinking about the who's, what's, and where's, and why's of how it was the universe was made. You're just living the universe. And like you, I'm giving it a thumbs up for that.
Yeah, so that's You Are Here, and it's well worth checking out if you've not had a listen to that show already.
I'll be listening to it again on the way home tonight. And one other thing I've been listening to, yes, I've managed to listen to 2 audio dramas this week, was Small Town Horror. Very impressed. Quite heavy narration, which is fine. because I've had a few like that recently, and it seems to be a real trend. But I really like the dialogue. It felt real.
Yeah, you know? I do like it. I've I've been listening to that as well, and it's a right sort of. It's got a really sort of good atmosphere about it. You say, it's heavy narration, but it's pulled off well, and the story's very strong.
Come to think of it, I've listened to three things recently, and it's like a personal best for me. Alice Isn't Dead, or is Not Dead. I think it's from the people that make Welcome to Night Vale, and I didn't like it.
Yeah, I've not heard it, but I just couldn't get into Night Vale at all.
And it was the opposite of what I've just said about small town horror. This person's talking, this female talking about something horrible that happened, but she's kind of saying, and then he put his mouth around the guy's neck and bit hard, and I heard it crunch. And I'm like, why are you so relaxed? I'd be like, losing my feces, so to speak. But the whole of the narration was one tone. And it was an interesting tone. It wasn't monotone, but it was so kind of laid back and relaxed that I just I'm popped out. Whereas the narrator in Small Town Horror is talking about it he has a vested interest. There's life and death at stake here. It felt real, So that was the difference. If you are going to go with narration, you really have to consider your delivery. Don't make it jazzy or sexy all the way through it, because it's not going to be sexy. You've got to come and go. There's got to be ups and downs and variance. To my mind, that's to my taste.
Let's all slag off Night Vale. We can't like everything. That's not the...
Yeah,
the purpose.
No, that's right. I mean, that Night Vale was hugely successful, so it's not going to suffer from us trying to take it down a peg or two. But it's all subjective. Everything we've said here today is subjective, even Donald Trump. So those are our thoughts. If you, listener, disagree with anything or have something else you want to say, we welcome it, unless it's abusive. You can email us podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Yeah, and with that, we'll let you get going. Thanks very much for taking some time out of your day to listen to us. We're in your debt for that.
Yeah, and if there's something that we can do to repay that debt, somehow give you some advice or point you to someone even more qualified than us, if that's possible, I'm sure it is, get in touch. We're also on the Facebook group. We're on Twitter. Are we on Tinder nowadays?
Yeah, Tinder, Grindr.
Right, well, get us on those, and love to hear from you.
Cheerio then.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.